waterfall always lit up. Circus, circus. Treasure Island with its intricate facade of decks and rigging and mizzens and vang. The Luxor, shaped like a ziggurat from Babylon of yore. Barbary Coast, whose sign out front says, "Cash your paycheck, win up to $25,000. These hotels are the Vegas we know. The land of Lola and Wayne, of Siegfried and Roy, Copperfield, showgirls in towering headdress, Sinatra's sandbox. Most of them built in the 50s and 60s, the era of mob chic and entertainment cum industry. Half-hour lines for taxis. Smoking not just allowed, but encouraged. Toupees and convention name tags and women in furs of all hue. A museum that features the world's biggest Coke bottle. The Harley-Davidson Cafe, with its tympanum of huge protruding hog. Bali's Hotel and Casino, with its row of phallic pillars all electrified and blinking in Grand Mall sync. A city that pretends to be nothing but what it is, an enormous machine of exchange, of spectacle for money, of sensation for money, of money for more money, of pleasure for whatever be tomorrow's abstract cost. Nor let us forget Vegas's synecdoche and beating heart, its kitty corner from Bally's, Caesar's Palace, the granddaddy, as big as 20 Walmarts end to end. Real marble and fake marble, carpeting you can pass out on without contusion, 130,000 square feet of casino alone. Domed ceilings, clear stories, barrel vaults. In Caesar's Palace is America conceived as a new kind of Rome, conqueror of its own people, an empire of self. It's breathtaking. The winter's light rain makes all the neon bleed. The whole thing is almost too pretty to stand. There could be no site but Las Vegas's Caesars for modern porn's awards show. Here, the AVN Awards are just one more spectacle. Way more tourists and conventioneers recognize the starlets than you'd expect. Double takes all over the hotel. Even just standing around or putting coins in a slot machine, the performers become a prime attraction. Las Vegas doesn't miss a trick. The annual AVN Awards are always scheduled to coincide with the International Consumer Electronics Show, also known as CES, which this year runs from the 8th through the 11th of January. The CES is a very big deal. It's like a combination convention and talent show for the best and brightest in the world of consumer tech. Steve Forbes is here, and DSS's Thompson. Sun Microsystems is using this year's CES to launch its personal Java 1.0. Bill Gates gives a packed house speech on Saturday morning. Major players from TV, cable, and merchandising host a panel on the short-term viability of HD TV. A forum on the problem of product returns by disgruntled customers seats 1,500 and is SRO. The CES as a whole is bigger than your correspondent's hometowns. It's spread out over four different hotels and has 10,000-plus booths with everything from the first ever full-text message pager in a wristwatch to the world's premier self-heating home satellite dish, the Snow and Ice Solution. But far and away the CES's most popular venue, with total attendance well over 100,000 every year, is what is called the Adult Software Exhibition. Yes, software is a funny misnomer here. It's going to be a constant temptation to keep winking and nudging and saying, no pun intended, or, as it were, after every possible off-color entendre, of which there are so many at the AVN Awards that your correspondents have decided to try to leave most of them to the reader's discretion as matters of personal choice and taste. This despite the fact that the CES itself treats the adult trade show kind of like the crazy relative in the family and keeps it way out in what used to be the parking garage of the Sands Hotel. This facility, a serious bus ride from all the other CES sites, is an enormous, windowless, all-cement space that during show hours manages to induce both agoraphobia and claustrophobia. A big sign says you have to be 21 to get in. The median age inside is 45, almost all males, nearly everyone wearing some sort of conventioneer's name tag. Every production company in the adult industry, from Anabolic to Zane, has a booth here. The really big companies have booths that are sprawling and multi-display and more like small strip malls. A lot of porn's top female performers are contract players, exclusive vendors to one particular production company, And one reason why a lot of the starlets seem kind of tired and cranky by Saturday night's awards gala is that they have spent much of the previous 72 hours at their company's CES booths, on their feet all day in vertiginous heels, signing autographs and posing for pictures and pressing all manner of flesh. The best way to describe the sonic environment at the 1998 CES is, imagine that the apocalypse took the form of a cocktail party. Male fans move through the fractal maze of booths in groups of three or more. Their expressions tend to be those of junior high boys at a peephole, an expression that looks pretty surreal on a face with jowls and no hairline. Some among them are video retailers, most are not. Most are just hardcore fans, the industry's breath and bread. A lot of them not only recognize but seem to know the names, stage names, and curricula vitae of almost all the female performers. It takes an average of 2 hours and 12 minutes to traverse the adult CES Expo, counting an average of 4 delays for getting lost after a chicane turn or some Baroque ceiling-high cheval glass designed to double the visual exposure of Heatwave Video's display for Texas Dildo Masquerade gets you all turned around. Your correspondents are accompanied by Harold Hecuba and Dick Filth, who have very generously offered to act as guides and docents. And here is a random spatter of the things we see the first time we come in. A second-tier Arrow Video starlet in a G-string poses for a photo, forked dorsally over the knee of a morbidly obese cell phone retailer from suburban Philadelphia. The guy taking the picture, whose CES name tag says hi and that his name is Sherm, addresses the starlet as babe and asks her to readjust so as to give us a little more bush down there. An elegant angel starlet with polyresin wings attached to her back is eating a Milky Way bar while she signs video boxes. Actor Stephen St. Croix is standing near the Caballero home video booth, saying to no one in particular, "Let me out of here. I can't wait to get out of here." St. Croix's background is that he apprenticed as a mason but then couldn't get union work. He's got great, dark, satanic-looking eyebrows and has won several AVN awards. Adult video stores all have a distinctive smell, a mix of cheap magnetic tape and disinfectant, and the Sands' former parking garage is rank with it. Asian businessmen move through the aisles in dense, graceful packs and are assiduously cheery and polite. A young guy in a full-color Frankenstein t-shirt is spray-painting cartoon flames on an actress's breasts at the Sin City booth. The actress, an obscure one, not even Filth and Hecuba know her name, has normal-sized breasts, and there's not much of an audience. Producer-slash-director Max Hardcore draws a way bigger crowd at the Maxworld booth, where one of his girls is squatting on the countertop masturbating with the butt of a riding crop. Max's video's promotional posters have him carrying a girl in mini-shorts over his shoulder against the backdrop of various city skylines. The pitches at the bottom say, "See pretty girls sodomized in manners most foul. See cum-splattered girls too stupid to know better." Max is a story all to himself, according to Harold Hecuba. Dick Filth and a porn executive dressed entirely in Campbell Nightwatch plaid are smoking cigars and keep holding their cigars up together and comparing the ash to see which one has the cleanest burn. A lot of the industry males and even some of the starlets are also smoking cigars. 1998 is definitely the year of the cigar. The starlets are all dressed in either extremely formal cocktail or else abbreviated latex/vinyl/lycra ensembles. Heels are uniformly sharp and ultra-high. Some of the starlets are so heavily made up they look embalmed. They tend to have complexly coiffed hair that looks really good from 20 feet away, but on closer inspection is dry and dead. Someone who is either sometime performer Jeff Martin or bizarro sleaze filmmaker Gregory Dark is doing sleight-of-hand tricks with his trademark fedora, meaning both men habitually wear fedoras. Whoever he is, he has a goatee. Harold Hecuba also has a goatee. Dick Filth has more like a soul patch. Hecuba and Filth, longtime industry journalists, know everybody here and keep getting stopped and drawn into conversations. These delays, during which your correspondents sort of stand there awkwardly at the edge of the conversation and try to look around as if they too know people here and are waiting only to spot them in the crowd before they go off and get into their own involved conversations, have not been included in the 132-minute adult CES traversal average. This year, a good 75% of the males in and around the porn industry appear to be sporting variants of the goatee. Dick Filth reports that a couple of years ago the big industry trend was heavy metal, and that everyone at the adult CES had very long hair and wore black tank tops and iron crosses, etc. Next to the outlaw video booth, a starlet in a gold lamé spaghetti strap gown, chewing gum and blowing large blue bubbles, is being videotaped by a disabled fan whose camera and parabolic mic are bolted to the arm of his wheelchair. The starlet is pointing to the tattoos on her left arm and appears to be explaining the origin and context of each one. At the Vivid Video multi-booth complex, Vivid is one of the industry's great powers, a company famous for having billboards that sometimes cause traffic accidents in downtown LA. Ms. Taylor Hayes has what is probably the longest autograph and flesh press line in the entire Sands garage. Taylor is major league pretty. She looks like a slightly debauched Cindy Crawford. And an oversized monitor suspended from the ceiling over the Vivid area shows clips of her scantily clad and dancing amid dry ice fumes. There's a berm of boxed videos on the floor by the counter, and a huge man with a visor and handheld credit card machine on Taylor's right flank as she greets each fan like a long-lost relative. According to Dick Filth, Taylor is both a genuinely nice person and a consummate pro. The booth for Explore Media, a company known for its Southern Bells video series and Orgy for World Peace website, is arresting because all the execs at Explore seem to be under 25, and the booth's atmosphere is that of a fraternity party in its third straight day. One young bald guy is unconscious in a fetal position on the counter, and some wag has glued all sorts of feathers and flaccid plastic two-headed dildo-ish things to his skull. Explore's owner, Auteurs, are two brothers, trust fund babies from a Connecticut suburb of New York City. Their names are Farrell and Moffett Timlake. Farrell, who wears 12-hole Doc Martens and cargo pants and what's either a very light parka or very heavy sweatshirt with a hood that stays up at all times, is a particular cause celeb at the 98 CES because he's apparently a friend of the two guys who do South Park, and these guys are rumored to be in Vegas and to possess tickets to tonight's awards banquet. Here, if you're interested, is Dick Filth's out loud, on-site, peripatetic expansion regarding the camaraderie between Explore and South Park. Quote, Explore is kind of an anomaly type of thing in the porn business. By and large, the industry is still run by these dim, grim, cigar-smoking numbnutses who'll just stare blankly at you if you should ever even, like, attempt a bon mot or whatnot. You get me? In contrast to how Explore are more of your hippie-ish, dope-smoking bunch of Gen Xers who are always up for a good gag. Like, after Trey, meaning Parker, the graining type figure behind South Park, and Farrell became pals via Parker's hanging out at Explore to do research for his and Matt Stone's Orgasmo, an upcoming movie about which your correspondents know nothing. Explore was doing a video shoot at Buck Henry's place. Explanatory details unavailable. Everyone simply acts as though Buck Henry's place being available for hardcore porn shoots were a matter of wide and public knowledge. Richard Dreyfuss and I think Carrie Fisher also were at the shoot. But no kidding, according to Filth, who your correspondents rather hope has a good attorney. And, as a goof, Trey and Farrell decide to switch identities, get it? So Trey pretends to direct, doing it in big drama queen persona. I want more ass shots, goddammit, type of thing. While Farrell hung back and pretended to take notes. Get it? Then later at one point, Trey orders Farrell, as Trey, to perform. Because, oh, Farrell performs sometimes too, under the name Timlake. Timlake, get it? And Farrell puts down the notebook and phone and robes and dives right in, which you can understand this completely freaks out the assembled legit showbiz types. Like, they're like, I can't believe the guy from South Park is having sex in front of a camera. Then at one point, Trey gives the video rig to Carrie Fisher. No kidding, he really says this. And tells her to try and do the close-ups as they're getting close to money. Definitions of industry jargon upcoming, type of thing. Get me? What a couple of yucks. End quote. Everyone without exception is sweating. At all but a few of the booths, contract starlets treat the fans with the same absent, rigid-faced courtesy that flight attendants and restaurant hostesses tend to use. You can tell how bored the performers are by the way their faces light up when they see someone they know. Well over half the industry's current superstars are in this huge room. The average professional lifespan of a female performer is 2 years. Males, though lower paid, tend to last much longer in the business, sometimes decades. The infamous TT Boy is here, standing alone with his trademark glower. The boy, who is rumored to bring a semi-automatic pistol with him to the set, and who was featured in a 1995 New Yorker article that was full of lines like, quote, "A porn shoot is an intricately delineated ecology." Mr. Vince Voyer is on hand, as are Seth Gecko, Jake Steed, Serenity, Missy, and Nick East. Here is the ageless Randy West, who looks just the way a surfer would look if that surfer were also a mob enforcer, with his perennial tan and hair like frozen surf. Mr. John Doe, winner of AVN's coveted Best Actor Video statuette in both 96 and 97, alternates between various booths, wearing his customary expression of having psychologically evolved to the point where he's so incredibly cool and detached that life is one long yawn. Here also is Mark Davis, far and away the most handsome of the current males, a near double for Gregory Harrison of the old Trapper John series, except for Davis's ultra-short psych patient haircut, plus goatee. And 20-year veteran Joey Silvera is at this year's CES, though mostly in his capacity as an auteur. Silvera now directs Evil Angel's popular Butt Row video series. Silvera, who broke in way back in the 70s at Times Square's old show world, looks like a curly-haired and extremely fit praying mantis. He's even weirder looking now that his curls are mostly gray. He's also famous for always showing up on the set with a small duffel bag filled with exotic vitamins and herbal and other supplements, all self-prescribed. Following the lead of pioneers like John Leslie and Paul Thomas, most of today's top male stars now also direct and, per the store boxes, present their own line of videos. For example, Tom Byron's Comeback Pussy series, John Doe's Dirty Stories, the eye-popping Rocco Siffredi's Various European Cities by Night line, etc. The So-and-So Presents series seems to be an industry trend, like cigars and goatees. It is difficult to describe how it feels to gaze at living human beings whom you've seen perform in hardcore porn, to shake the hand of a man whose precise erectile size, angle, and vasculature are known to you. That strange, "I think we've met before" sensation one feels upon seeing any celebrity in the flesh is here both intensified and twisted. It feels intensely twisted to see reigning industry queen Jenna Jameson at the Vivid booth, chilling out in Jordaches and a latex bustier, and to know already that she has a tattoo of a sundered Valentine with the tagline "Heartbreaker" on her right buttock, and a tiny hairless mole just left of her anus. To watch Peter North try to get a cigar lit, and to have that sight backlit by memories of his artillery-esque ejaculations. What's maybe even weirder is that you can then scuttle back to your hotel, if you wish, and watch Jameson and North have hardcore gymnastic sex in The Wicked One on pay-per-view for $9.95. To have seen these strangers' faces in orgasm, that most unguarded and purely neural of expressions, the one so vulnerable that for centuries you basically had to marry a person to get to see it. Mr. Harold Hecuba, whose magazine job entails reviewing dozens of adult releases every month, has an interesting vignette about a Los Angeles Police Department detective he met once when Hecuba's car got broken into and a whole box of elegant Angel videotapes was stolen, a box with Hecuba's name and work address right on it, and subsequently recovered by the LAPD. A detective brought the box back to Hecuba personally, a gesture that Harold remembered thinking was unusually thoughtful and public-spirited, until it emerged that the detective had really just used the box's return as an excuse to meet Hecuba, whose critical work he appeared to know, and to discuss the ins and outs of the adult video industry. It turned out that this detective, 60, happily married, a grandpa, shy, polite, clearly a decent guy, was a hardcore fan. He and Harold Hecuba ended up over coffee, and when Hecuba finally cleared his throat and asked the cop why such an obviously decent fellow, squarely on the side of law and civic virtue, was a porn fan, the detective confessed that what drew him to the films was, quote, "the faces," that is, the actresses' faces, that is, those rare moments in orgasm or accidental tenderness when the starlets dropped their stylized, "fuck me, I'm a nasty girl" sneer and became suddenly real people. Quote, "sometimes, and you never know when is the thing, sometimes all of a sudden they'll kind of reveal themselves," end quote, was the detective's way of putting it. Quote, "they're what do you call humanness." It turned out that the LAPD detective found adult films moving, in fact far more so than most mainstream Hollywood movies, in which latter films actors, sometimes very gifted actors, go about feigning genuine humanity. That is, quote, "in real movies, it's all on purpose. I suppose what I like in porno is the accident of it," close quote. Hecuba's detective's explanation is intriguing, at least to your correspondents, because it helps explain part of the deep appeal of hardcore films. Films that are supposed to be, quote, "naked and explicit," but in truth are some of the most aloof, unrevealing footage for sale anywhere. Much of the cold, dead, mechanical quality of adult films is attributable, really, to the performers' faces. These are faces that usually appear bored or blank or workmanlike, but are in fact simply hidden, the self locked away someplace far behind the eyes. Surely this hiddenness is the way a human being who's giving away the very most private parts of himself preserves some sense of dignity and autonomy. He denies us true expression. You can see this very particular bored, hard, dead look in strippers, prostitutes, and porn performers of all locales and genders. But it's also true that occasionally, in a hardcore scene, the hidden self appears. It's sort of the opposite of acting. You can see the porn performer's whole face change as self-consciousness, in most females, or crazed blankness, in most males, yields to some genuinely felt erotic joy in what's going on. The sighs and moans change from automatic to expressive. It happens only once in a while, but the detective is right. The effect on the viewer is electric. And the adult performers who can do this a lot can allow themselves to feel and enjoy what's taking place, cameras or no, become huge, legendary stars. The 1980s Ginger Lynn and Keisha could do this, and now sometimes Jill Kelly and Rocco Siffredi can. Jenna Jameson and T.T. Boy cannot. They remain just bodies. This weirdness may account for some of the complex emotional intercourse taking place between the performers and fans at the adult CES. The patrons may leer and elbow one another at a distance, but by the time the men get to the front of the line and face the living incarnation of their VCR's fantasy babe, most of them turn into quivering, goggle-eyed schoolboys, sheepish and salivaless and damp. The same thing evidently happens at the hundreds of strip clubs all over the country where porn starlets appear as featured dancers for five figures a week, according to Filth, and do photos and autographs after the show. Quote, "most of these guys become incredibly nervous when I come up to them," veteran starlet Shane has explained. Quote, "I'll put my arms around a guy and his whole body will be trembling. They pretty much do whatever I tell them to do." Close quote. The whole industry now has this oddly reversed equation. The consumers are the ones who seem ashamed or shy, while the performers are cocky and smooth and 100% pro. It is no longer the 1980s, and the Mies Commission mentality that led to a major crackdown on video porn is long gone. Federal task forces and PTA outrage are now focused on the internet and kiddie porn. But today's adult industry is still hypersensitive about what it perceives as fascist attacks on its First Amendment freedoms. A specially prepared trailer now runs before many higher-end adult videos, right between the legal disclaimer on the product's compliance with or exemption from Title 18, U.S. Code Section 2257, and ads for phone services like 1-900-666-FUCK. Against shots of flowing flags and the Lincoln Memorial, a voiceover says stuff like, quote, "censorship goes against our Bill of Rights and the founding principles of this country. It is an attempt on the part of the government to legislate morality and to stifle free expression." Whether the framers of the U.S. Constitution might, in their very wildest imaginations, have been able to foresee things like anal virgins 8 or 1-900-666-FUCK when they were thinking of expression they wanted to protect, is obviously a thorny question and outside this article's purview. Still quoting, this new, quote, legal morality is dangerous to all Americans. Vote for those who believe in limiting government intrusion into your personal affairs. Vote against government control of your life and home. Vote against censorship. Only you, the people, can keep the American ideal intact. Close quote. These trailers always say they're sponsored by either the Adult Video Association or something called the Free Speech Coalition. Both organizations, and the extent to which the two are separate is unclear, are basically industry PACs, political action committees. Porn, in other words, has taken the political lessons of the 80s to heart. It is now a hard lobbying political force, no less than GM or RGR Nabisco. Feminists of all different stripe oppose the adult industry for reasons having to do with pornography's putative effects on women. Their arguments are well known and in some respects persuasive. But certain anti-porn arguments in the 1990s are now centered on adult entertainment's alleged effects on the men who consume it. Some masculists believe that a lot of men get addicted to video porn in a way that causes grievous psychic harm. Example, an essayist named David Mura has a little book called A Male Grief, Notes on Pornography and Addiction, which is a bit new agey but interesting in places. For example, quote, at the essence of pornography is the image of flesh used as a drug, a way of numbing psychic pain. But this drug lasts only as long as the man stares at the image. Dot, dot, dot. In pornographic perception, each gesture, each word, each image is read first and foremost through sexuality. Love or tenderness, pity or compassion become subsumed by and are made subservient to a, quote, greater deity, a more powerful force. The addict to pornography desires to be blinded, to live in a dream. Those in the thrall of pornography try to eliminate from their consciousness the world outside pornography, and this includes everything from their family and friends or last Sunday's sermon to the political situation in the Middle East. In engaging in such elimination, the viewer reduces himself. He becomes stupid. Close quote. This kind of stuff might sound a little out there, maybe, until one observes the eerie similarity between the eyes of males in strip clubs or stroke parlors and the eyes of people in their fifth hour of pumping silver dollars into the slot machines of the Sands Casino. Or maybe until one's seen firsthand the odd kind of shock on the faces of CES patrons, seeing performers now in the flesh, complete with chewing gum and chin pimples and all the human stuff you never see, never want to see, in films. Maybe just a little bit more here on the whole scene at the adult CES, which is a whole lot more of a rub elbows type venue than the stylized award ceremony is going to end up being. Mr. Harold Hecuba is deep in conversation with a marginal porn producer about one of his performers being sidelined with something called a prolapsed sphincter, which condition your correspondents decline to follow up on in any way. We are standing just west of a staff writer for Digital Horizons, who's dropped by to scope out the legendary scene in here again this year, and is telling two presumed other tech writers that being around porn people always makes him feel like he's been somehow astrally projected onto a cocktail napkin. It is also roughly now that Ms. Jasmine St. Clair is making an appearance at the impressive media booth in order to spell the starlet behind the counter, who is limping to the booth's rear area. She, meaning the limping starlet, has reportedly had to be sprayed with silicone to fit into her pants. The crowd at the impressive media venue immediately starts to enlarge. Jasmine St. Clair is wearing a red vinyl jacket and miniskirt ensemble. A porn starlet entering any kind of room or area has a distinctive energy or aura about her. You turn your head to look at her even if you don't seem to want to. It's like watching a figure from a pinball machine illustration or high-concept comic book step out into 3D and head your way. It turns out really to be possible to feel as though your eyeballs are protruding slightly from their sockets. What makes the whole thing so weird is that Jasmine St. Clair isn't even all that pretty, at least not today. Her hair is dyed black in that cheap, unreal goth way, and she is so incredibly heavily made up that she looks like a crow. She is also somewhat knock-kneed, plus, of course, has the requisite howitzer-grade bust. Miss St. Clair is being escorted to the impressive booth by two large men whose expressions are describable only as mugshotish. This is another thing about porn starlets. They're never alone. They're always accompanied by at least one and sometimes as many as four flinty-eyed males. The impression is that of a very expensive thoroughbred being led onto the track under a silk blanket. FYI, Ms. Jasmine St. Clair's cult celebrity status at the 1998 CES stems from her having broken the World Gangbang record, set previously in 1994 by one Amber Chang at 251 males, by taking on 300 men in a row in Amazing Pictures' 1996 World's Biggest Gangbang 2. Since most of these 300 men were amateur porn fans who'd had only to fill out an application and produce an HIV all-clear from the Department of Public Health, she now enjoys an almost legendary populist appeal, the people's porn star, and an enormous serpentine line of fans with cameras and autographable memorabilia has formed at the impressive booth, which line Ms. St. Clair appears for the moment to be ignoring, because she and Harold Hecuba, having exchanged double-cheek kisses, are now deep into some kind of tete-a-tete above the sockless docksiders of the unconscious bald kid, who has, meaning the kid has, evidently been carried or trundled by pranksters unknown from the Explore counter right next door to this one. Dick Filth, after your correspondents have remarked on how it's kind of heartwarming that everyone in the porn industry all seem to be friends, even critics and performers, dishes an involved anecdote about how Jasmine St. Clair apparently once actually tried to strangle Harold Hecuba at an industry soiree a couple of years ago, an anecdote which appears as the following funny-voiced note. According to Dick Filth, the imbroglio started when Hecuba crashed the party and was spotted by Ms. Nikki Sterling, about whom Mr. Hecuba had said in a recent film review that it was, quote, unclear whether she'd win any beauty contests, but she sure could suck cock, unquote. It was apparently the beauty contest crack that had hurt Ms. Sterling's feelings, and on seeing Hecuba and suffering the relaxation of social inhibitions for which entertainment parties of all kinds are famous, the starlet made a beeline for Hecuba, uttered two high-volume expletives, and attempted to strike the print journalist with an open-handed right cross, whereupon Harold had the presence of mind, aided perhaps by the 6-inch heels that made Miss Sterling's balance precarious and forced her to telegraph the blow, to grab her hand before it could knock his trifocals off. Whereupon in turn Miss Jasmine St. Clair, seeing Harold Hecuba clutching the upraised hand of an agitated and off-balance Nikki Sterling, performed a set pick off the 3-foot width of Ron, the hedgehog Jeremy, and leapt on Hecuba's back and deployed what Filth averred was a pretty authentic and impressive-looking LAPD-style chokehold, prompting Hecuba to whirl 360 degrees in an effort to dislodge Miss St. Clair while he still had the cerebral oxygen to do so, inadvertently whip-cracking Miss Sterling into Randy West and mussing Mr. West's hair for the first time in industry memory and, to the best of Filth's recollection, simultaneously dislodging Hecuba's special auto-tint trifocals and sending them out in an arc across the room and into the forbidding décolletage of Miss Christie Canyon, never to be recovered, meaning the glasses, or even seen ever again. Filth also reports that the Sterling incident had been just either the iceberg's tip or the camel's straw so far as Jasmine St. Clair and Harold Hecuba were concerned. Harold had evidently also conducted a recent interview with Jasmine, in which she had confided that she was taking the rather staggering amounts of money she was making from World's Biggest Gangbang 2 and investing it in a rather dubious-sounding string of pornographic gumball machines all up and down the California coast. And Hecuba had chosen to include this confidence in the published interview, and Ms. St. Clair was reportedly furious that Hecuba had publicized her, quote, secret investment strategy, believing that now everyone and his brother was going to want to get into adult-themed gumball vending and it would glut the market. And so Jasmine St. Clair had had it in for Harold Hecuba for some time, and may well have viewed the Sterling incident more as a convenient excuse than as the rescue of what appeared to be an endangered colleague. Dick Filth says that debate over the motives behind the chokehold 360-degree hair cleavage fiasco has been vigorous and multiform for 20 months now. Filth also appends, apropos nada, that Miss Jasmine St. Clair happens in real life to be the granddaughter of late New York City capo de tutti capo Paul Castellano, who was assassinated in the 1980s, at least partly because of his opposition to the mob's involvement in, quote, immoral enterprises like narcotics and porn, and who thus has to have been doing a good 180 RPM in his grave ever since World's Biggest Gangbang 2. Plus, apparently coming soon to an adult retailer near you, Ms. Jasmine St. Clair, in a bid to retain and even enhance her cult status, allows butane gas to be pumped via PVC into her lower colon and set afire on expulsion, resulting in a 3.5-foot anal blowtorch for Cream Productions 1998 Blow It Out Your Ass. 20 feet away, over at Explore, Mr. Farrell Timlake has meanwhile produced what is alleged to be the prototype and world's only authorized Kenny action figure from the upcoming South Park merchandising line. 14 inches tall, kind of heavy for a doll, with hood up and face obscured, not unlike Farrell Timlake's own hood and face, and is entertaining some of the impressive media crowd spillover by manipulating the doll's limbs to simulate its, quote, toking a bone. Not unlike urban gangs, police, carnival workers, and certain other culturally marginalized guilds, the U.S. porn industry is occluded and insular in a way that makes it seem like high school. There are cliques, anti-cliques, alliances, betrayals, conflagratory rumors, legendary enmities, and public bloodlettings, plus involved hierarchies of popularity and influence. You're either in or you're not. Performers, being the industry's fissile core, are of course in. Despite their financial power, studio execs and producers are not very in. And directors, especially those who've never undergone the initiation of having on-camera sex themselves, are less in than the performers. Film reviewers and industry journalists are even less in than execs, and non-industry journalists are way, way non-in. Almost as low caste as the great mass of porn fans themselves, for which fans the insider term is mook. Mook means roughly what rube used to mean among carnies. Like all psychically walled communities, the adult industry is rife with code and jargon. Wood is a camera-ready erection. Woodman is a dependably potent male performer. And waiting for wood is a discreet way of explaining what everybody else in the cast and crew is doing when a male performer is experiencing wood trouble, which latter term is self-evident. SS means a sex scene. A DP is a double penetration, wherein a starlet's vagina and rectum are simultaneously accessed by two woodmen. See, for example, 1996's semi-classic NYDP Blue. Certain especially stoic and or capacious actresses are apparently available for triple penetrations, but these performers are rare and so, thankfully, are TPs. Tush and Bush denotes a film with both anal and vaginal SSs. Skeet, noun/verb, is a term used for both the act of male orgasm and the material thereby emitted. Note, however, that both Harold Hecuba and Dick Filth aver that one of their big challenges as reviewers is to keep coming up with lively and evocative synonyms for semen. Money, short for money shot, is a successfully filmed male orgasm, which of course 100% of the time takes place external to the female partner. For example, a facial is a money whose skeet is directed onto the partner's cheek or forehead. Girl-girl signifies a sapphic SS, which every single hetero film seems to require at least one of. Beam denotes a straight-on, deep-focus view of a dilated and wood-ready orifice. A B-girl is a second- or third-tier porn actress who's lower paid than a starlet and is usually available for more perverse, degrading, or painful SSs. Fluff, verb, is unfilmed oral activity designed to induce, maintain, or enhance a woodman's wood. And high-end porn films used to employ what were actually called fluff girls, who were usually B-girls in waiting. Exercise. Use at least 8 of the predominant adult industry terms in a well-formed English sentence. Sample solution. After a kind of long wait for wood, a B-girl fluffed the rookie woodman into a state where he could take part in a DPSS whose frequent beams required maximum wood. and after a shaky start, the SS ended up in a spectacular double facial, in which the starlet really displayed her professionalism by managing to stay enthusiastic, even though some of the skeet went in her right eye. The foregoing is meant to help explain how exactly your correspondence ended up in porn titan Max Hardcore's personal suite at the Sahara, and got to hang out in the suite's living room with Max, certain of his crew, porn starlets Alex Dane and Caressa Savage, and two B-girls, which is to say that it was actually Harold Hecuba and Dick Filth who were invited to hang out in the suite on Friday afternoon, but your correspondents clung almost like papooses to their backs, and the burly Max World production assistant wasn't quick enough about slamming the door. So your correspondents were, for a couple hours, at least logistically speaking, in. For a regular civilian male, hanging out in a hotel suite with porn starlets is a tense and emotionally convolved affair. There is, first, the matter of having seen the various intimate activities and anatomical parts of these starlets in videos heretofore and thus, weirdly, feeling shy about meeting them. But there is also a complex erotic tension. Because porn films' worlds are so sexualized, with everybody seemingly teetering right on the edge of coitus all the time and it taking only the slightest nudge or excuse, a stalled elevator, an unlocked door, a cocked eyebrow, a firm handshake, to send everyone tumbling into a tangled mass of limbs and orifices. There's a bizarre unconscious expectation slash dread slash hope that this is what might happen in Max Hardcore's hotel room. Your correspondents here find it impossible to overemphasize the fact that this is a delusion. In fact, of course, the unconscious expectation slash dread slash hope makes no more sense than it would make to be hanging out with doctors at a medical convention and to expect that at the slightest provocation, everyone in the room would tumble into a frenzy of MRIs and epidurals. Nevertheless, the tension persists, despite the fact that the actresses are obviously tired and disassociated from the day's CES. The female performers seem, in truth, not just uncommunicative but downright surly. How much of this is trade show fatigue, and how much is the stony demeanor of insiders toward all outsiders is anyone's guess. They are all in post-CES mufti, baggy jeans and cotton halters and big fuzzy slippers, etc. Without their makeup and appurtenances, Savage and Dane look even prettier. The B-girls do not. They all spend most of the time on the suite's long vinyl couch watching a syndicated Seinfeld triple header. Plus, it emerges, they're somewhat sore. It turns out that Max Hardcore is shooting one of his, quote, gonzo porn spectaculars right here at the 1998 Consumer Electronics Show, using the CES as a hook and backdrop, and the girls have been alternating CES booth duty and riding crop shenanigans with a tight and SS-intensive filming schedule. Max, being a firm believer in the fait accompli method of filmmaking, has not yet gotten around to chatting with the CES's administration about his featuring the world's biggest consumer tech trade show by name in a See Pretty Girls Sodomized in Manners Most Foul video. Mr. Max Hardcore, also known as Max Steiner, also known as Paul Steiner, nay Paul Little, is 5'6" and a very fit 135. He is somewhere between 40 and 60 years old and resembles more than anything a mesomorphic and borderline psycho Henry Gibson. He is wearing a black cowboy hat at what has to be one of very few long-sleeved Hawaiian shirts in existence anywhere. Once the production assistant guarding the door mellows out and introductions are made, Hecuba managing to drop the name of this magazine several times in one sentence, Max reveals himself to be a genial and garrulous host, and offers everybody disposable plastic cups of vodka before settling in with your correspondents to discuss what for Max are the most pressing and relevant issues at this year's AVN Awards, which issues are the career, reputation, personal history, and overall life philosophy of Mr. Max Hardcore. Pioneered, depending whom you talk to, by either Max Hardcore or John Buttman Stagliano, gonzo has become one of this decade's most popular and profitable genres of adult video. It's more or less a cross between an MTV documentary and the Hell Panel from Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights. A gonzo film is always set at some distinctive locale or occasion, Daytona Beach at spring break, the Cannes Film Festival, etc. There's always a Randy and Salavis host talking directly to a handheld camera. Well, and we're here at the Cannes Film Festival, and it looks like there's going to be lots of excitement. John Travolta and Sigourney Weaver are supposed to both be in town, and there's also the world-famous beach. And I'm told there's always some real seriously good-looking little girls at the beach, so let's us head on down. That's the approximate lead-in to a recent Max at Cannes gonzo, a type of signature lead-in that Max refers to with a 56-tooth grin as, quote, always mercifully brief. And please note the little girls at the beach thing, because this is another of Max's professional signatures, the infantilization of his video's females as dramatic foils for his own film persona, which is always that of a sort of degenerate uncle or stepdad. Then the shaky but ever-focused camera heads on down to the ocean or mall or CES or whatever, scoping out attractive women, especially their bottoms, it seems, in the gonzos of Max, Buttman, Mr. Ben Dover, and Butt Rose Joey Silvera, while the host moans and chews his knuckle in lust. Then pretty soon,